Introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When legendary drummer Keith Moon was MIA, who did the Who turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
When the great Pele asked for a sub, who did his World Cup team turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
Now this world-renowned musician slash athlete has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only... I mean, could you imagine a twin? Paul Lavoie.
And welcome to Speak Out. It is Monday, March 15th, 2021. Last week, I actually wrote down 2020 on one of the days. And I said 2020, and nobody caught it.
Well, not one. I think everybody's done that at least a few times.
It's the first time all year for me. I'd either written it or said.
Yeah, you know, and it's really too late to be doing that kind of mistake.
Yeah, I know, and it's just
It's okay in January. Now it's got some deep meaning.
But it's an awful year to refer to when you think about it. This is like one of those years that'll go down in infamy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Let's not relive it.
Right. This is our first responders hour, Jim.
Yes, indeed.
You call it Dos Jefes.
Dos Jefes.
We only have Uno Jefe today.
Yeah, it sounds like a cartel interview.
Yeah, not good for Troy.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Troy.
Thank you, Captain.
Troy Sterling.
Yes, sir.
We were reminiscing in the green room about back in the day you were Detective Troy Sterling.
Yeah, I came on your show, I was Detective Sergeant, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say Sergeant,
but that's still many years ago.
How the mighty have risen.
Yeah, and you still look the same. Yo, Paulie, yes. Yeah.
I still look the same, a few pounds that I'm shedding.
He didn't say good.
Yeah, right. Paul, you still have a face for radio. I love it. Awesome. But don't we all? That's why we're here. Right, Chief Pete?
That's right,
Paul. All right, Chief Pete Palafis and the Havasu Fire Chief. And we had the honor of sitting with MCC at their table at Top Chef.
Yes, we did. It was a great event. Mm-hmm. Well, the turnout was excellent. It was just great to finally, get out, see some people. Obviously, still keep our precautions, but I really enjoyed the event. Enjoyed MCC for inviting us, and I had the pleasure to sit next to Paul and definitely catch up on some things and
car stuff.
Yes, car troubles here in Arizona.
Car stuff, registration to fixing them to everything.
Yeah, let's see. Perhaps you talked about your wheel bearing.
just got it fixed. But thank you.
For the third time.
That's very true. Good memory on Jim.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised. So I got to silence my phone here or.
I know it's your first day on the radio.
No, it's not that. There's, hang on. All right. So we do have a game tonight with the Phoenix Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies. Tonight, 7 p.m. You didn't even know there was a team named the Grizzlies, did you?
I didn't.
Yeah, see, Jim doesn't do basketball or hockey.
It doesn't have an engine. It isn't a sport.
Exactly. That's on 980 AM, 94.3 FM, and 100.5 FM in Bullhead City. And, referring back to Top Chef, I thought later there was a lot of little food there.
Yeah, there was.
A lot of little food. You guys know what that means? Okay, you know the USAA commercials where the guy says, "My sister makes small food." Yeah. What do you got to say about it, right? That's exact little micro dishes. Uh-huh. So it's kind of cool. But those were the apps.
They were. And everybody that participated, great food. Shout out to everybody. But Paul, they were just making sure you're watching your figure.
Oh, you can watch it. Watch it grow. Anyway, Captain Troy, it's always good to see you here in the studio. And, you know what? I left my notes in the other office, believe it or not, but I want to talk about the Island Fire.
Sure.
On both perspectives. You remember that. It was last week, right?
It was,
How long did that take to put out?
Well, the thing is, it started roughly, on Saturday, about 6 at night, we got a report of a brush fire on the island at that beach.
I love that.
Yeah. So the thing is, undetermined what started it. I mean, an individual reported that they possibly saw a sky lantern, which are illegal to fly, especially in the desert, and especially we have just a fuel load of the brush fires. So we responded out there, applied some resources to it, and obviously combination with the police just to assist us to keep individuals away. But there really wasn't too much of a hazard because all it was just burning the natural vegetation right. in that area. So we just make sure that it's contained, that it's not impinging on any of our residential areas, any of the embers. And the weather actually worked out well for us, and we just let it burn. And the thing is, we did coordinate with the Arizona Forestry Management that manages the brush fires in that area. It is the city. Since it's in the city limits, we provide our resources. And then once our resources go beyond our capabilities, then that's when we'll call in the state for assistance. But based on that particular fire, there was no reason to allocate too much resources there because it's just burning along the shoreline. And we realize that there isn't a nuisance of, you know, the smoke in the area. And I do give the kudos to all the Lake Havasu residents of being aware of the situation. And the police did a great job trying to get it out in public media that we are aware of the situation. And what I try to do is just limit some of the resources that we have because we have other emergencies that are occurring in the city. So I have to give a shout-out to our CERT team. They actually sat on that fire with us at a department vehicle just monitoring the situation. If it did get out of control, we would, you know, allocate some resources to there. But the best option for that period was just to let it burn and just kind of control it. So.
Jim, you live in Crystal Beach.
Yes.
Does that type of fire concern you?
No.
Being in a remote area like that? And the island's tough to get to?
We're pretty close to the Desert Hills Fire Department there. And having had the unfortunate need to have called them twice.
Really?
Yes.
Twice in how many years?
Well, twice in the past couple of years, twice in the overall time. Both of them completely my fault.
Really?
Yeah. But I've gotten to experience firsthand
why Jim can't light a barbecue.
Unfortunately, one of my semis caught fire.
Oh,
and we
that's not funny.
It wasn't. No, fortunately we were able to get it out. The fire department responded very quickly, but we were able to. Because we're in the events business, we have an ample quantity of fire extinguishers, and so we used about a dozen fire extinguishers to fight the fire before the department got there. But anyway, to answer your question, no, but we've sampled the response time.
So Captain Troy, is this something where the department provides support for the perimeters so people don't interfere with the fire department and their operations? How's that
if work? Needed, for sure. I mean, we're always in support of the fire department. We always work well together. So, yeah, if that was a need in this case, it really wasn't. Yeah, it's more of a as-needed type of thing.
So the report of a sky lantern, is that something that you guys would follow up on, or do you know where that even came from? A sky lantern is like a luminary, right?
Sure. And the thing is, I mean, we got a reported person, I mean, which was unconfirmed. So that's why it's really...
It was even in the paper, though.
Right. Well, you know what? My fire prevention, Scott Hartman, basically got the information. But, again, it was unconfirmed. So, really, the cause of the fire is undetermined. Obviously, it did start the fire, and something started the fire, but the cause of it is undetermined. We just speculate based on the information that we received.
Well, we know the recent pyro that was running around town is in custody.
Yes.
Alleged pyro, I should say. He's in custody, so it wasn't him.
It definitely, we could say 100,
right?
I'll give 99%.
And Troy knows what I'm talking about. That would take a miracle.
Yeah, that kept everybody busy.
Yes, it did.
Right. You know, let's talk about how extensive was that? I guess 5 county cars, is that right? Or 3 or 4 that I know of.
I believe it was 3.
Yeah, I think it's 3.
3 vehicles.
Yeah.
And then you had some...
we had roughly about 5 unoccupied structures and vacant structures.
Homes under construction?
Yes.
What do you mean by vacant structures?
We had one that was just vacant. No one was living in it. It wasn't under construction.
It wasn't a shed or...
No,
any, okay.
No. Well, we had a shed also. So it started with the 3 vehicle fires at the county building and then moved to a shed. And basically what we're trying to do is just track them. And the police did an excellent job assisting with tracking that individual
down.
It's
an equal opportunity fire starter there, Jim. Yeah. Wow.
Just to go back, when you were talking about the fire on the island, did I understand you to indicate that wasn't officially in your jurisdiction? Was that because of the proximity to the water, or what?
I guess here, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
the thing is, it's within city limits, but it's actually Arizona State Trust land. So it's land is owned by the state. So, but it's within our jurisdiction. So we have an agreement that will provide resources for areas that are within our city limits. And then if things go beyond our scope of our resources, then that's, since it's the state land, their ability to bring in their resources to help us mitigate those situations. So, now,
but does that extend beyond what would be normal if, let's say, the fire were occurring downtown?
Well, yeah, because that would actually be within our city limits, our city property, and we're responsible providing that resources for that. That's why we still have a mutual aid agreement with other fire departments within the county, but Desert Hills, Kingman, Buckskin, but those resources are an hour away.
Yeah.
And not so much Desert Hills, but the thing is, then that's where we're really self-sufficient when it comes to taking care of our own.
Mm-hmm.
At least in that particular situation where we had the brush fire, well, at least we had the resources. Since it's not, it's a state trust land,
yes,
but it's still, again, within our city limits, we're going to provide resources to our capabilities and then call them in if we need any further assistance. Very similar, like I would call a mutual aid if I had a big fire downtown.
Uh-huh.
How does that work manpower-wise? Do you use more power at the outset of a brush fire and then less to maintain when you let it burn out? How does that actually work?
Well, the thing is, it's just going to depend on the size of the fire and the risk. I mean, that's the biggest thing is when it comes to fire, the risks associated with losing other structures and obviously the individuals in the area. That's why we try to keep everybody out. Again, we appreciate the inundation of 911 calls, but eventually we were aware of it. And I think that's where we just need to get a little bit better communication-wise is saying we're down there, we're aware of it, we're letting it do what it needs to do and burn out. But if anything was to impede on any structures or any risk of anything going further, especially with the embers, we are going to take action and we'll apply more resources to it.
But now you're here from the Chicagoland area.
Sure.
So it's a little different terrain-wise, isn't it?
Absolutely. Is that
totally new to you?
It is somewhat new to me. I mean, I grew up in a suburb that we had forest. I mean,
sure.
The thing is, but we would
have the woods.
We have the woods.
Yeah.
So they would do prescribed burns. So to prevent stuff like this from happening.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I'm trying to work with Arizona State Trust to maybe take a little bit more proactive approach and actually start putting some fire breaks in certain areas. Is, you know what? There's where you do the cost analysis. If it takes me this much money to mitigate or at least prepare or prevent something from happening, or do I, you know, when something does hurt, I manage by crisis. Then we just put more resources to it, and it could potentially cost out. So I'm trying to work with them to do some preventative stuff in the desert.
But you had mentioned that distance, that backup is away from us. So on a normal fire, when you just send your guys out with an engine and go out to fight a fire, do you put on notice the surrounding department so they can be halfway ready if you make that emergency call?
That's my co-host there.
That's
a good question.
Excellent question. I mean, the thing is, there's a certain amount of individuals that will put on a structure fire versus residential and commercial.
Okay.
So there's a certain amount of resources that will apply, and then we'll see how our benchmarks. Are we meeting the benchmarks? Are we containing the fire? Our first mutual aid is Desert Hill. We'll have them come in to assist us. And then if our resources get beyond our capability, I'll call in a recall. So I'll have off-duty firefighters come in, start manning the reserve engines that we have. If we go beyond that, then that's where I'm going to start calling in Kingman, Buckskin, and start basically notifying them early. And our battalion chiefs are really good about that. If they understand that this is not something that we can't handle, call them in early because they can always go home. They can always return.
Is it a little psychological resistance to that? Is that like, you know, we couldn't handle it, so we had to call Kingman to come help?
Well,
does it look bad for
the FBI,
department?
Like the FBI walking onto a crime scene, right, Troy?
No, it's
not
just
happening.
Yeah. Nice.
I think more times it's just reality. If we need more resources, if they're available, we just need to – be conscious is that they're going to take such a long time to get here.
Sure.
I mean, again, that's why we are self-sufficient, where we need to make sure that we have the appropriate resources in the city to have that capability. But no, I think it's just a risk first benefit, you know? I mean, the thing is, sometimes when you need to call in help, you call in help. Mm-hmm. And then that's important. And it's not only important for our firefighters, but also our residents too. Because I don't want it to basically get out of control. We want to make sure we contain it.
Has there been any incidents of having to call in?
No, but you know what? Since I've been here, and I'm coming up on my year anniversary in April.
All right.
So it's been excellent. We've been out to Kingman twice.
Oh, really?
To assist them with multiple fires. And I asked my command staff, I'm like, is this normal? And they're like, no, Chief, we haven't been out there at least between 5 and 10 years. And
gee,
I'm just like,
wow.
And the thing is, but it takes us an hour
to get
out
there. Sure.
You know? So that's what we just need to be cautious with.
That's got to be one heck of a fire to request assistance from Havasu, which is an hour away.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, they have limited resources just like we do.
Sure, sure. So. All right, we're with Chief Pete Palafis and Captain Troy Sterling. I started to say Captain Sterling Troy, but anyway, I don't know why. All right, back with more in a moment. It's definitely a Monday. Brother Jim Russell is here as well as we endure construction noise around the building. Probably can't hear it on the air, hopefully. But anyway, we'll be right back on our First Responders Day on Speak Out. Stay with us. We're back on Speak Out, and I know you may not have ever heard that song, Chief Pete, but to me, that's one of the best Journey songs ever. There's something about that song. I don't know what it is, but it might be Steve Perry solo, though. I'm not sure. Anyway, Brother Jim Russell and I are back. Speak Out brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage, also Bradley Chevrolet, Bradley Ford, GDK CPA LLC, Horizon Community Bank, Springberg McAndrew Financial Services, Patio Paradise, and Connected Computer and Technology.
And they're good folks all that just want a shot at your business. Tell them you heard about them on Speak Up.
Probably going to lose my man card after playing that song, but hey, you know, that's how it goes, right?
It was a probationary card anyway.
It was a what? Probationary?
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot. I don't know if you've heard of this, Jim, but it's pretty cool. Sam Scarmardo left it with us. It's the Parker, Arizona MV Campout and Swap Meet. MV being the operative initials of military vehicles. Starting this Thursday, March 18th through the 21st, which is Sunday. More information, I believe, is at LaPazCountyParks.com, where you can get your campground reservation there. And it's La Paz County Park on Riverside Drive in Parker. Everything gets underway Thursday. And if you want reservations and information, get a hold of Mike Colgan. That's Colgan, Colgan7@cox.net. So there
you
have it.
Very cool. And truck collecting and showing is a big part of a growing part of the car collecting phenomenon, and military vehicles are a significant part of that.
Especially the old Willys Jeeps, right?
Yeah, well, the smaller trucks are real popular,
okay.
You know, that you can drive without tearing up blacktop.
Speaking of smaller trucks, off-road, that sort of thing, the topic of side-by-side enforcement came up when the mayor was on the show with us last, Troy. And as I understand it, there's nothing really on the books as far as, I don't know how, you're not supposed to run through washes in the city, but what about after hours? There's a lot of people, visitors in the city, that like to take their side-by-sides out after dark, maybe even after 10 or 11 o'clock at night. The bright lights that they have are going into windows and that sort of thing. What's the enforcement angle on that?
And that's a tough one. I would have to say that's not a huge complaint area for us. Obviously we deal with, you know, vehicle speeding in neighborhoods, you know, far more than we deal with the side by side issue. I mean, there's obviously we have city code enforcement, you know, a you know, a section in there dealing with off-road vehicles and city limits. Of course, we have Title 28 with licensing requirements for, you know, on the city roads, those type of things. So those are areas that we can readily enforce. But, you know, kind of going back to your initial question, we really don't have a huge influx of complaints in that regard. So, and as those type of complaints would come in, then we would respond to them and deal with them as we can.
So with regard to response and enforcement, that sort of thing, does the city or the police department specifically have a vehicle that can handle those types of pursuits?
Well, number one, you said a bad word, pursuits. I mean,
well, you have to chase them
down. I'm not
going to
get my off-road vehicle and pursue.
Okay.
So we'd look at different alternatives to kind of two questions there. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, we do have a couple off-road vehicles, but okay. We primarily use those more of our community services unit down in the channel when they're, you know, during their time on the weekends,
sure. They're
patrolling in those type of vehicles just because they're a little more mobile and they can get to those areas like that beach, the different areas that are remote. We don't like to beat up our cars in those type of areas. But as far as I can't think of, you know, over the years, very minimal, I can probably count on one hand as far as, you know, times where we'd have to take an off-road vehicle out in pursuit of
right.
any type of a violation.
Interesting. We're going to call it that scorched beach now.
Don't worry, in about 2 or 3 years it'll be back to normal.
Right.
Captain, you mentioned the calls, the complaint calls.
Mm-hmm.
What's number one? What do you get the most calls at the from citizens about?
Especially right now during the pandemic.
Between calls and, you know, when the chief goes out and speaks at a different engagements, it's always traffic enforcement is always really at the top of that list. And it's one of those that we get a ton of complaints via a multitude of sources. You know, we have our anonymous tips. We have, you know, the social media component of that. And all of those complaints come in and are diverted to our traffic sergeant, and they're put into a database, and it's one of those things that all of our officers on patrol have access to this database, and then they can hopefully plan their day around if, let's say, they're going to be writing a report or something, and they can sit in an area,
yeah.
If anything else, at least be that high profile, at least be visible there and hopefully deter the speeding vehicles. Of course, it's everywhere. You know, and
sure.
You know, there are certain areas of town that are a little bit more higher frequency complaint areas, and so the officers try to hit those more than the ones that are maybe very low frequency. So, and of course, the school zones, you know, in the morning times and afternoon. So, just trying to hit as many of those as they possibly can, but it's a tremendous amount.
When a traffic officer goes out on duty or patrol, does he have a specific area to emphasize his patrol on each day? Before he leaves, do you say, okay, now this is where you're going to be based all day?
Yes. It's called a beat. Officers have beats, and so downtown area is a 30 beat. So based on their assignment, they would be day shift would be a one Paul 30. So 30 is their beat responsibility. Mm-hmm. So they handle their calls for service down there, and then if there's any complaint areas, if they're having a slow day for calls for service, mm-hmm. then they'll get to the traffic side of it, or property watches, those type of things, those ancillary duties that go along with that. But of course, calls for service is the primary function.
You know who else has beats, Jim?
No.
Drummers and news guys.
Very good.
Totally. All right, back with more in a moment. We're with Chief People Office and Captain Troy Sterling. I should say Lake Havasu High School graduate Captain Troy
Sterling. Absolutely, go Knights.
There you go. All right, and one of your brethren just retired as Chief of Police up in Bullhead City.
Yes, he did, Brian Williams.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we wish Brian well if he's listening to the show. Not sure what he's doing now. You haven't heard
either. I haven't
heard,
no.
Wow, it is a big secret. Because detectives and captains, they know, you know, the scoop.
Everything, sure.
All right. They're the source when it comes to news. All right, myself and Jim Russell will return in just a moment. Stay with us on Speak Out.
Within round of reach above.
Man Speak Out, brought to you in part by Mojave Community College, Shagru's Family of Restaurants, Better Business Bureau, SamsGuns.com, Sun Power by SMA Electric, Big Sky Insurance, Herb's Herbs, the Lewis team at Coldwell Banker Realty with, you're not going to believe this, Jim, over 1,000 homes sold and counting.
Jeez. In what period?
I don't know.
But well, I guess that means a lot.
But Bobby Lewis and Chad Hansen will be on the show this Wednesday, the Real Estate Power Hour, so I'll make sure and ask them.
Good.
It's actually, that is the name of the segment, the Real Estate Power Hour. We teamed up a mortgage originator, of course, like Chad, and I think Bobby's a broker, or he's definitely a seller. So, yeah, we teamed them up. They had two separate segments, and we said, no, let's tear the wall down. So there you go.
Very good.
All right, we're back on Speak Out with Captain Troy Sterling and Chief Pete Palafis from the Lake Havasu City Fire Department and Police Department, respectively. And I got to talk about this investigation that was in the paper last week. I know it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I'm in awe that somebody actually set up a place to sell drugs a block away from the police department. Really? And that was an ongoing investigation.
It does happen. It's crazy, right?
It's insane.
I mean, when I can look out the window and I can see the narcotics detective serving the search warrant, that's close.
Troy, that reminds me of a Florida story, you know? You've heard of these things that are called Florida stories? It's just the craziest things you've ever heard. That reminds me of one of them.
Yeah. No, it definitely happens. And, you know, just kind of a shout out to our Special Investigations Unit. They've been very busy. They have several ongoing investigations, you know, working at any given time. And so just another example of what they're trying to do to combat the drug problem. So.
Does something like that come out of an anonymous tip? How does that work? Or is it just observation by the police?
A variety. We do get a lot of anonymous tips, and those are greatly appreciated. So those of you out there that are listening, please continue to do so. But an anonymous tip is just that, and so it's part of the investigation process to be able to substantiate those and put together the little pieces of that puzzle, to put it all together and hopefully lead to a search warrant and you know, two things, getting the drugs off the street and then making the arrest. So but yeah, it's just a time-sensitive type of investigation that involves a lot, and we do encourage and need the help from the public to help put those pieces together.
Tell us about that search warrant process. How does that work? I mean, I know there's evidence involved. I know there's taking it to a judge involved. We see it on the TV shows. They seemingly get it in a half an hour or so.
Right.
I don't even know if that's correct.
Oh, getting it all in a half hour?
Yeah.
Really?
Who's that judge, right? Yeah.
No, it's these ongoing investigations. It really is. It could be all of them are different, right? And there's not just a set. Here's what we're looking for, but a lot of little pieces based on the intel that's being received. The detectives substantiating that, doing their own research and intel. You know, there's a lot of resources out there on the internet, those type of things. And the detectives putting all those pieces together. And then once they feel they've reached that probable cause state, then they draft up that search warrant affidavit and they go before the judge. And the judge reads over that. And if they have questions, like, no, I think you could tighten it up here in this area. Oh. Then the detectives can go back and do a little more groundwork to solidify that. And then once they get that piece ready to go, then the judge signs off on it. Then that's when the search warrants are executed.
Is that a superior court judge, municipal judge?
No, typically it could be any judge.
Oh.
We typically try to use the magistrate. Judge Kalali typically likes to view our search warrants.
Sure.
So we try to give him that first opportunity, but we have the pro tems, and we also have Judge Jill Davis. So we go through. We try to use our local judges as much as possible. You're talking very serious and federally involved investigations when you start going to the Superior Court judges.
Oh, okay, interesting. Our number, by the way, is 854 KNTR 928 854 5687 if you want to talk to Captain Troy Sterling, Chief People Office. Hey, listeners, it's your show. Make it talk radio, not just listen radio. Right, Jim?
Sure. I've got a question.
Speaking of talking.
Yes.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Just about to ask a question to Chief Pete. Chief, amongst your assets, your engines are probably the biggest single expense, are they?
I would say personnel.
Oh, of course.
I mean, 100% personnel, but I have to have personnel to put them on the engines. If we're just talking about vehicles, yeah. My biggest assets are not only my employees, but this the entire city, because we all work as a team.
Uh-huh.
And when it comes to, you know, making sure where I have the right vehicles for the right, basically, incident is we really depend on having reliable engines in our aerial ladders and our ARVs. You know, it's an alternative response vehicle that can handle the service demand within the city.
Mm-hmm. How do you determine when to retire or replace them?
Well, you know what? We work with our fleet maintenance, and we have a point system that's based on reliability, mileage, hours on the vehicles, and just the maintenance costs. Once the maintenance costs start exceeding the threshold of, you know, buying a new one, it's time to get rid of it. And the thing is, we have, you know, obviously extreme conditions here with the heat that puts a lot of wear and tear on our vehicles. And we do have, I mean, just last year, in 2020, we run over 8,700 calls. Of service.
Wow. So 8,700.
So Jim, if that were true for event producing, you'd probably have to buy a vehicle every 4 or 5 years, right? I saw the one at the Balloon Fest. I was like, wow, and looks like it's been through a few events.
My semis. You know, in let's see.
He still uses 8-track, by the way.
Only for the big events. My semis go about 500 miles a year total between them, so I don't tend to wear them out.
Right,
just
right.
Live forever. But so every one of your engines has a different replacement time.
Well, the thing is, in 2014, like Capsu made that big purchase with all their new frontline apparatus, all the new engines in the aerial. So you know what's important is to actually have a replacement program. That actually spans it out incrementally over time instead of making these group purchases. And that's what we're working on, at least in the fire department, is to look at our point system and to look at where we're currently status of what our apparatuses are at. You know, and the thing is, it's just through the budget process that I'm going to create this plan and see if we have the funding to support it. But it's important that we have reliable rigs for our staff and safety, and that we can show up to your incident.
Yeah, you can't be calling the auto club come start your engine when you get a call.
So is that type of maintenance list that you just described, is that true for pretty much every fire department?
Well, I think it's true for any basically municipality. I mean, you have a fleet of vehicles that you need to make sure that you maintain.
Sure.
And the thing is, you need to have a plan so then you can rotate them out. Because, you know what, the thing is, everything has a service life. And the thing is, once you start dumping lots of funds into it, it's time to cut your loss, and we need to move on to a newer vehicle. But the thing is, vehicles are expensive. And this is what I stress with my firefighters. You know, what we get as a new engine, that's a gift from the taxpayers. So you treat it with respect. You treat it just like your own. And the thing is, because we need to have it reliable to respond to their incidents. So it's a gift.
Yeah.
And it's a very important gift for us.
Absolutely.
Good. Very cool.
While we're on the subject of fires and that sort of thing, before we get to COVID, and I know you wanted to talk about the vaccination clinics that's coming up, spring and summer burning tips. A lot of people, at least like I would imagine in your neighborhood, Jim, in Crystal Beach, would like to do a little yard work, maybe burn leaves, burn debris, that sort of thing that's been, you know, that's burnable in a barrel or wherever. What's the tip for that? I mean, what's legal? Do they have to get permission from you first?
Sure. Here, let's get the tip. At least within Lake Havasu City,
okay,
it's illegal to burn your lawn waste. The thing is, what you need to do is bundle it up, put it up by the garbage. Republic will properly dispose
of
it.
So it's illegal to burn?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, here's one thing. I just want a little tidbit that your in-ground weeds, once you pull them, you can burn them, but you need to have a permit through the city. Hmm. Now, the thing is, just especially with cleanup and stuff, just properly disposable, disposing of the vegetation is key. Mm-hmm. Because if you start, even the in-ground weeds where you can burn them with a propane torch and you get close to the house, there has been incidents here where you got a little too close, and then now we have a house fire. So the thing is, out in the county, that's different.
Right. When I lived, I lived in the county in Mojave Valley probably over 10 years ago. All you had to do was notify the fire department so they knew where the smoke was coming from.
Sure, sure.
But there was no permit process or anything.
There is a permit process for the in-ground weeds.
Does that cost money?
The thing is, you know what, I don't know on the question if there is a permit fee, but you can actually, we're trying to get a streamlined process where you can go online and get the permit. And it's important for us to know. I mean, because... I mean, we're in the desert. It does get dry, and I mean, there
does get windy.
It does get windy, and that's important.
And all of
too.
A sudden,
yeah. So the thing is, it's just be very cautious because you know, especially around your neighbors, is don't.
Right. You know, is that something the police department enforces as well?
We would respond out to those, and sometimes it's almost a dual effort. But typically, the police department would respond to those complaint type calls and make a determination if we even need to respond to the fire, but typically fire is already going to be responding to those type of calls, so we're more of an assistance
support role.
Needed. Yeah, that's
sure. Yeah. So tell me about these vaccination clinics that are coming up,
actually, let's just call it, it's an event. It's a drive-through event that's going to occur on St. Paddy's Day, March 17th at station number 2 on Kiowa, and this is a combination with the Department of Health and Safeway. They're actually sponsoring this vaccination event. They've asked us to use our facility to facilitate it. So what the city is doing is we're providing them the facility. Our CERT team's actually volunteering to help them with traffic flow. So we want them to make sure that this is a successful event for them. The press release went out on Friday, so individuals can register. You can get that information on the county website. I know the goal is about 500 vaccination within they're going to do the event from 8 a.m. to 4. So the thing is, what we want to stress is that obviously there might be some congestion in the area. If anybody's registered for this event, make sure you come off a College Drive going west. Because you'll be going through the service entry in the back of our station. And it's going to be a drive-through. So I just wanted to put that out there, that this is a good thing for the city.
Yeah.
And, especially with COVID kind of on the reduction side and stuff is slowly opening up, this is good for individuals that want to get vaccinated.
So is this a test operation?
Well, I wouldn't say...
I don't mean for COVID testing.
No.
I mean for this type of delivery of the vaccination.
Well, they've delivered this same drive-through program in Bullhead and Kingman. Now it's time to come out here to Havasu to give that opportunity to our local residents to get vaccinated. The thing is, this is only first shot. Mm-hmm. So it is the first shot of Moderna. But the thing is... we're hopefully going to plan another event with them for the second shot. But the key thing here is you have to be registered or you're going to get basically told to go away.
Sure.
So
You'll have to call Captain Troy.
Yeah. Well,
I don't want to say Jim's old, but he's had both already.
I have, yes.
Well, good.
I'm invincible.
That's funny. Did you guys want to add anything? Troy, did you have anything that you wanted to add? Police department announcements, anything like that?
Are we at the end of the show already?
Jim and I are going to take a little,
a
little segment at the end because the events are starting to open up.
Well, I always want to throw a shout out to, you know, the hard workers and public safety dispatch and our patrol officers, the front line, and firemen. So thank you all that are doing the job out there every day. As we approach summer, I guess really... You know, as we start hitting the boats, on the lake and having our kids around water, just please, everybody, take precautions out there. Watch your kids around water and please be responsible boaters and enjoy the summer. So,
especially the kids around water part.
Yeah.
And that applies to the fire department as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just take that extra moment to watch the kids around the pool. A lot of this stuff is just preventative by just paying attention. And I'd like to make a shout out to just really the residents of Lake Havasu City. Thank you for your support for the city, police, and fire. We really appreciate it. I look forward to another summer here in Lake Havasu. Hopefully the temperatures are not as bad as last year, but it does get hot around here.
I'll do my own shout out to Jill and Terry, right?
Yes.
For keeping us on track. when we do these shows. So, yeah, Jill, what? I can't remember.
Eckelberger.
Eckelberger.
Yes.
And Terry Haas.
And Terry Haas, right, so. From the fire department. All right. Great show, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
You got
thank
through
you for
it.
Having us, yes. Yeah.
All right. And I'm not sure if Chief Doyle will be here next month or not, but he's got an able assistant, right?
He does. He
You're
does.
You're not an assistant.
He's the future.
He's a he's a captain. Yeah, Captain Future.
Yep.
That's what we call
him. Call anytime you need me back. I'm here for you.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Thanks. It's been a long time. It's been
it
too
has.
Long. But I did see you at a Fallen Heroes salute, I believe it was, 1 year in Bullhead City.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Long time ago.
I was a speaker at that, yes.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
That's right. All right, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Lavoie. A band I saw with Journey, Brian Adams. Pretty good show, I would say. He was on his first tour. So we'll put up Summer of 69. Jim and I will be back with more in a moment. We're going to talk about, we're going to give you a little preview of what we're going to talk about tomorrow when it comes to Ready
yes.
Fair. And there's some other events coming back to town as well.
Yes, indeed.
Back with more in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Paul Lavoie. We got about 3 minutes left, to be exact, on Speak Out. I'm Paul Lavoie, along with Brother Jim Russell, and a good show.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, nice to have those guys. And great for the community that we have those guys out there.
Right, absolutely. And you're coming back tomorrow.
Yes.
Just to pester me.
Just to keep you honest and above board.
Well, that's going to be a job
yes.
right there. Anyway.
We'll have our guest tomorrow. We'll be Melanie Preston of Havershire Festivals, who is producing the upcoming Renaissance Fair.
Yeah, so, nice program, by the way. I got a sneak peek at
yes.
the book.
Yes, magazine.
At the magazine, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I call it the book because it's the event book.
It
so,
is.
There
it
you
is
go.
Indeed.
How long have you been doing that event?
Well, I'm a contractor to that event,
right.
Fortunately, since its inception. I worked with Dr. Raymond on the first one.
Oh, my.
And but this will be, if I'm not mistaken, the fifth.
The fifth year.
Yeah,
okay.
The sixth year, fifth Renaissance Fair. We kind of skipped last year.
So Dr. Raymond now back in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the event outlived Dr. Raymond.
Yes, I think
so to speak.
Yeah, Dr. Raymond created it as a class exercise and it was such a good planning mm-hmm. thing that they decided to actually produce the first one. They did, and Dr. Raymond discovered that the students were better at planning it than at working at it. So it lost a little of the bloom.
Right. Only makes sense for a city with the London Bridge
yes.
to have a Renaissance Fair. It's
yes.
a perfect fit.
It is a perfect fit, and it's a geographical perfect fit. There are two very large fairs on either side of us, mm-hmm. one in the Phoenix area and one in the Vegas area. You know, plus with our great bridge here, it's a perfect fit, and this will grow into a giant event.
So about a minute left in the show. Tomorrow we'll have, of course, Jim with the representative Stephanie, you said?
No, Melanie. Melanie Preston.
Melanie Preston with the Renaissance Fair. We'll have Russ Mascari on the first part of the hour. On tomorrow, he's with the Havasu Freedom Foundation. Wednesday is the Real Estate Power Hour. Then on Thursday, Brian Springberg will not be here. We'll find out more about the Lake Havasu City Stampede.
Oh.
The rodeo is coming to town. We'll have Jerry Honeycutt in here along with the rodeo announcer. That'll be a lot of fun. And then Friday rounds it out with Go Lake Havasu CEO Terrence Concannon. And first, we're going to have a regular segment every month now with Mike Bonney, GDK CPA.
Wow.
That'll be cool,
so,
especially right now being taxed.
Yeah, bring all the tax problems
right.
to
right, right, right. So we're winding it down. Folks, have a safe rest of the day, and we'll see you tomorrow on Speak Out. Don't you ever,